Wake Forest is a place of lively debate, meaningful conversation, and intellectual exploration. We seek the truth and discuss the issues of the day. So too with journalists who seek to uncover and explore events of our world. David Brooks has made a career of sparking conversation and inspiring debate. Mr. Brooks is an insightful voice on political and social issues, currently as columnist for the New York Times and previously for the Wall Street Journal. He has written two books examining what he calls cosmic sociology, Bobos in Paradise and On Paradise Drive, both of which are insightful, lighthearted social commentaries on the realities and the foibles of contemporary American culture. Mr. Brooks brings the most relevant issues of our time to the pages of the newspaper on our breakfast tables. His words compel us to have conversations about the issues that matter most, and we are pleased to have him with us today as he sparks yet another conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming David Brooks.
Thank you, President Hatch. By the way, what a fine and generous man President Hatch is. We had a chance to chat last night over dinner, and the first thing you notice about him is that he is such an active listener, someone who listens and hears what you say with his whole body. And there are university presidents who actually don't have that quality. And in Washington, where I come from, that quality is almost entirely unheard of. And for you graduates, I should mention, for who haven't been to a graduation before, when the president hands you your degree later, it's customary to tip him $10-$20, should be fine. It's also a great honor to be here. Those of us who haven't really experienced the pit in all its glory, who've never been down in the tunnels, still can see upon first coming here how much people love this place. And it's a great honor to be part of that and to share this day with you. Now, Wake Forest class of 2007, the first thing to say is you've earned this. You didn't just begin working for this day 4 years ago. You've been working for this your whole lives. I can see you now as third graders coming out of your elementary schools after a long, hard day of college prep. You're lugging those 80-pound backpacks that hardworking third graders now carry. If the wind blows you over on your backs, you're sort of like beetles, kind of stuck there. And some of you are coming out of school, and you're getting picked up by a creature I've studied in my books called Uber Moms. And these are highly successful career women who've taken time off to make sure all their kids are perfect. And you can usually tell the Uber Moms because they actually weigh less than their own children. They come to elementary schools driving Audis and Saabs and Volvos because in certain corners it's socially acceptable to have a luxury car so long as it comes from a country hostile to U.S. foreign policy. And even at the moment of conception, they're doing little exercises to stay fit and trim, calculating what to wear at their child's Wake Forest commencement ceremony. Then during pregnancy, they're taking so much soy-based nutritional formula, the babies they produce are these massive 12-pound things that sort of look like toothless defensive linemen coming out. The moms are in the delivery room themselves, cutting the umbilical cord themselves, adjusting the video lighting, asking the ultimate Uber mom question, which is her APGAR score above average? To be whisked off to the gifted and talented ward for Wake Forest-bound infants. Then on the way home from the hospital, they're flashing cue cards at the little baby, beginning the SAT prep. And to make the baby environmentally conscious, they're taking it to Whole Foods, this organic grocery store, to give it some organic baby formula. Whole Foods is one of these grocery stores, sort of progressive grocery stores, where all the cashiers look like they're on loan from Amnesty International. Actually, my favorite part of there is the snack food sections, because they couldn't just have pretzels and potato chips, because that would be vulgar. So what they have are these seaweed-based snacks, What we get in my house is called veggie booty with kale, which is for kids who come home from school and say, "Mom, Mom, I want a snack that'll help prevent colon rectal cancer." Then as the kids get older, the enlightened parents buy them Ben & Jerry's ice cream, the ice cream company with its own environmental policy. I once suggested that Ben & Jerry's should make a pacifist toothpaste. Doesn't kill germs, just ask them to leave. Be a big seller. And so day by day, the Uber moms and the Uber dads are perfecting their kids, driving them to oboe practice and soccer practice. And by the time, you know, you guys have applied for college, I read your applications, you started 6 companies, you cured 4 formerly fatal diseases, did community service by doing environmental awareness training in Tibet. We've got a college president in Washington named Steve Trachtenberg who says of his students' community service, "I don't know where these kids find lepers, but they find them and they read to them." So now all that work has paid off and we're here at commencement. This is a ceremony that marks a turning point. It's a moment of great accomplishment, but also of great uncertainty. All your life, adults have been giving you hoops to jump through, and from here on out, you have to make your own hoops. Up until now, there have been a few channels to succeed in. From now on, there's going to be an infinity of ways to succeed. I have a friend whose daughter is a Las Vegas casino fountain choreographer. Believe me, she didn't go through college thinking she'd design fountain light shows in Las Vegas. Most of you in 10 years will have jobs you're not even aware of today. From here on out, the skills you need to succeed will also change a bit. The average collegiate GPA for a self-made millionaire in this country is 2.7. You know all those morons who sat in the back of the classroom goofing off? In a few years, you're going to have a new name for them, boss. A cheer from the back of the hall there. In short, things are about to change big time. And one of my messages today is that, you know, the uncertainty you feel today, it never goes away. And the question is, do you know how to make uncertainty your friend? Now, commencement is a ceremony when the university gets a rich and successful person to tell you that being rich and successful is not that important. And I've got bad news for you. I'm not actually that rich, and I'm not that successful. But I've been around a lot of successful people. You see, I'm a journalist. If you go to a stadium and you're watching the crowd do the wave, there's usually one group of people just sitting there taking notes, and those people are journalists. We lead boring lives hanging around people who lead interesting lives. And I've observed a few things about the few really great people I've had a chance to meet and cover. First, they tend to have really big heads. Or somebody once said, what they have doesn't look like a head, it looks like a container for a head. They also can't sit still. They need to be around people all the time. You and I require sleep. They require people. But here's one other thing that I've noticed that separates the really great people from the merely famous ones. They talk to dead people. Merely famous people have pictures of themselves on the walls of their office and their home. Really great people have pictures of dead people on the wall and on their desks. It's one of the things I look at when I go into somebody's office. And they talk about and with these dead people on a day-to-day basis. John McCain, who was here a few years ago, talks a lot about a guy named Mo Udall, who was a Democratic politician McCain loved being around. McCain wrote a book called Faith of My Fathers about his father and his father's fathers. Barack Obama also wrote a book called Dreams from My Father about his own late father. All his life, Abraham Lincoln talked with the founders of this country. Winston Churchill talked with the Duke of Marlborough. Theodore Roosevelt talked with the men and women who settled the West. The dead were alive to these people, looking over their shoulder. I recently ran across an example of this kind of conversation with the dead in a new book called I Am a Strange Loop by an Indiana University professor named Douglas Hofstetter, a scientist. Hofstetter was married to a woman named Carol. They loved washing the dishes together after dinner parties and reliving the conversation they just had. They had the same ways of raising their kids. Then Carol died when their kids were 5 and 2. A few weeks later, Carol Hofstadter was looking at a photograph of Carol. And here's what he wrote. I looked at her face and looked so deeply that I felt I was behind her eyes. And all at once, I found myself saying, as tears flowed, "That's me, that's me." And those simple words brought back many thoughts that I had had before about the fusion of our souls into one higher level entity, about the fact that at the core of both our souls lay our identical hopes and dreams for our children, about the notion that those hopes were not separate or distinct hopes, but were just one hope, one clear thing that defined both of us, that wielded us into a unit, the kind of unit I had but dimly imagined before being married and having children. I realized that though Carol had died, that core piece of her had not died at all, but had lived on very determinedly in my brain. The Greeks used to say we suffer our way to wisdom. Through his wife's death, Hofstadter suffered his way to wisdom. In his day job as a scientist, he confirms that wisdom every day. Hofstadter is part of a revolution in brain research, in genetics, and in understanding who we are. And this revolution is going to change all our lives in the next 10 years. The first thing this revolution confirms is that when Hofstadter says that Carol is alive in his brain, that's not just a metaphor, that's true. The brain is more like quantum mechanics than a machine. It has many parallel swirls, a multitude of feedback loops, and it performs many simultaneous tasks. And you are the culmination of all those patterns implanted by your ancestors, your parents, and your friends. You have a wake forest pattern in your brain that will influence you forever. It's who you are. The second thing we've learned is that we are not masters of what we think. At any moment, the senses can absorb about 11 million pieces of information, but the mind can only be conscious of about 40. There's a vast automatic part of our brain that we're not aware of, but which is learning from and responding to the world around us. And this backstage part influences when we feel happy or fearful. It shoves up memories and thoughts whether we want them or not. It selects information to pay attention to and helps us make sense of the chaos all around. The third thing we've learned is that all these swirls and light shows, all of this backstage process, it's all activated by emotion. Some philosophers used to separate reason from the passions, but that's wrong. Without emotion, the brain can't make a decision. We're the products of the people and things we love. We learn from people we love, and we learn in places we love. And so the fourth thing we've learned from this revolution in understanding ourselves, which is the culmination of all the other things, is that it's not right to say that success is something we achieve individually. Success is not something that we do or which happens to us. Success is something that happens through us. We inherit, starting even before we're born, a great river of knowledge, a great flow from many ages and many sources. The information that comes from millions of years ago we call brain chemistry. The information that comes from hundreds of thousands of years ago from our hunter and gatherer ancestors we call genes. The information that was revealed thousands of years ago we call religion. The information passed along hundreds of years ago we call culture. The information passed along decades ago we call family. And the information you absorbed over the past few years at Wake Forest we call education. But it's all information, and it flows from the deep past through us into the future. It flows from the dead through us to the living and the unborn. We exist as creatures within this hidden river of knowledge the way a trout exists in a stream. We're formed by the river. It's the medium in which we live, and it guides us how to live. The great people that I've met talk to the dead because they want to connect with the highest and most inspiring parts of that river. When people make mistakes, it's often not because they're evil. It's because they don't have an ideal to live up to. And these great people also talk to the dead because they want a voice outside their selves. Much of our current culture culminates in the self. It's all about making you happy, making you rich. It treats you as the end of a long process. But the most powerful people I've interviewed often don't feel that smart or that special. They have powerful jobs, but they don't feel that powerful. They don't feel like architects building a great project of their lives from scratch. They feel instead like riverboat captains negotiating the currents around them. And they want to step outside their egotism and understand the river of events. They want to understand how people in the past have negotiated its channels. They want other voices in their heads so they can possess the ultimate power, which is the power of facing unpleasant truths. Finally, I think they talk to the dead because they want to widen their time horizons. We're living in a technological age that turns everything ephemeral. Newspapers become blogs, letters become text messages, everything becomes a more temporary version of itself. But this other scientific revolution, this genetic and neuroscience revolution, lengthens our time horizons. It underlines how much we owe to the Ice Age hunters and gatherers ages and ages ago. It underlines that we're part of this long process. People who talk to the dead want to feel connection to this procession through the ages. They need to feel in their bones where they've come from and what ultimately they'll leave behind. Over the years, we all pick up good advice. Spend a year abroad when you're young. It's bound to change your life. Think hard about who you marry. It's the most important decision you'll ever make. Devote yourself to your kids. Nothing else is guaranteed to make you happy. And the only one I'd ask is create a posse of dead people. Create an entourage of heroes. Put their pictures on your wall and keep them in your mind. They'll remind you of your place in the hidden river of wisdom. They'll serve as models. They'll give you an honest perspective on how you're doing. They'll remind you that your blessings don't come from you, but from those who came before you. Now, as I wrap up, I feel a little guilty because I haven't gone on about how wonderful you are. And I'm sure you've been told you're wonderful, and I'm sure you are wonderful. But I'm even more sure that you're blessed. Sitting here, you guys have won the lottery of life. You've got great friends in a great institution in a great country. And if you use these winnings wisely, you're going to have a delirious few decades ahead of you. And maybe you'll come back here in 60 years and watch your grandkids graduate on this spot. And I bet you'll find that that day is even more beautiful than this one. So good luck, class of 2007, or as the great leader Colin Powell once said at this spot, party on, Demon Deacons, party on.